interesting times, and because of that, we bring in the great Tim Brando. Welcome, Tim. Great to have you back with us.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be with you. Anything going on? Sort of a lazy July day in college football, you think?
Yeah, let me just check my phone for a moment, Tim, see if I can find something.
Since I got off the golf course at noon, I've been dodging howitzers coming from Twitter from the eight leftovers in the Big 12 conference that think the sky is falling. And I understand their frustration. God knows I've certainly been a proponent for the so-called have-nots in college football, but I just think that emotions are really, really running high, and we've never seen anything like this. In my 40 years of covering college football, we've never seen a cease and desist letter from a conference commissioner to a television rights holder go public, and we've not seen the rights holder go public with his curt rebuttal to that conference commissioner. I mean, these are men that are sitting in boardrooms and agreeing to multi-million dollar deals, going at one another in a very public way. I guess it's a sign of the times, perhaps, the so-called edge that our country is living on to some extent, affecting everybody's jobs, including those that fall into that particular category of leadership. So it is bizarre what's happening now. That all being said, I have, as you know, been a proponent for unified leadership. I've been a proponent of getting the NCAA decentralized, as their current president now calls it. It should have been, and in my mind was, years ago, when the first Supreme Court ruling came down in 1984. Good. I'm glad they now know they're insignificant, in Indianapolis when it comes to college football. And I think that the actions of the Southeastern Conference and its commissioner are progressive, and that's what we need more of. We need leaders to lead. And, this is going to cause a paradigm shift, I think, between now and the time we actually kick off. We'll probably have some other news about realignment. History would certainly indicate that always happens. Once there is a mega move, there's always a checkmate to a check. And I suspect that wheels are turning literally at every conference office right now.
Well, if you are one of the remaining eight in the Big 12, and you're looking at the possibility of, no matter how it turns out, the possibility of losing anywhere to 25 to 30 million a year in media rights after 2025,
right?
Would you be in a position, Tim, of thinking every man for himself and just start working the phones yourself if you're an AD?
Well, it depends. And listen, understand this, okay? They're still making a lot of money for a four-year period here, okay?
That's right.
They
yep.
are. I mean, the Big 12 teams are paid handsomely. They are, in fact, their deal is worth more than the ACC's, which was a new deal that they agreed to for 12 years with ESPN just solely to get a cable network. You know, they John Swofford so badly wanted an ACC network, and his presidents did, that they went, I thought, overboard in getting that accomplished, with the fallout being they didn't get the kind of money that they really should be getting to compete with the Big Ten and the SEC. So the Big 12 is actually financially doing better than the ACC. Each member institution makes more money. Now, they don't make as much as Oklahoma and Texas, but that's been part of the problem with the Big 12 for so long, the sellout that's been gone on for such a long period of time. You know, they allowed those teams, those schools, allowed Texas and Oklahoma to get greater shares, and the league office was complicit in that regard. And that was a real problem from the jump for the Big 12. The SEC, going all the way back to Roy Kramer, who in 1992 had the first divisional breakup of a conference when he added South Carolina and Arkansas, and had the first conference championship game, which was a really big deal at the time, he told everybody, you're all going to get the same cut, okay? Alabama, you're going to make the same money as Vanderbilt, okay? That's just the way it is here. And, you know, the history and tradition of a lot of conferences and also the business decisions of those conferences will almost always impact what happens today. I don't know if you saw it, but I wrote a piece about the history of it all.
I did.
Put it on my social platforms yesterday, and our friend David J. Halberstam of Sports Broadcast Journal put it on his website, and I handled all of that. Fans don't necessarily have to understand or care about anything other than what's going on in their backyard and their front yard, and I get that, but you know, from a big snapshot point of view, I really think this is good for college football, that we are, and if we are headed towards super conferences, Steve, with unified leadership, that's not going to destroy necessarily the other teams that aren't in the super conferences, because we've already seen with regard to the CFP, we're going to go to 12, and there will be room for the top six conference champions. Well, if there are only four super conferences, that means there'll be two other spots, right?
Right.
Well, that's two more than existed last year, right?
Right. And that's why I've told people, don't panic. If you stay in your spot, you're going to have a spot available in the playoffs.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, the thing that's kind of funny to watch just from a media standpoint to me, because my friends at ESPN, and I have a lot of friends there that are involved in this, I do get a kick out of sort of watching how this all transpires. My friend Paul Feinbaum is having to deal with it, you know, on a daily basis, and I'm sure he's walking on eggshells for all the 4 hours that he's on. Dennis Dodd wrote a story on CBSSports.com, which indicated a couple of days ago that the league in question that had been working in a covert manner with ESPN was the American Athletic Conference. Okay, right. He put that in his piece.
You're right.
Right, I mean, he did.
Yep,
there's been no follow-up on it whatsoever. Zero.
Right, zero. No follow-up.
I actually tweeted Dennis yesterday saying, hey, Dennis, has there been any substantiation of that of the American being the, you know, the deep throat in all of this? asking for a friend, you know?
Yeah.
Because Mike Oresko is a friend of mine, and I'm sure he's had to go underground, you know, since then. That's why you're not seeing any comments from him. But, I mean, listen, I don't doubt at all that there are some hurt feelings over clandestine meetings and conversations about this. And I'm not sure that Bob Bowlsby's done yet, you know. Everything else has been pretty public to this point. I suspect that whatever he's going to say next will also be public, because he's got to fight for his eight schools. Those people are upset. They're pissed. I mean, I'm telling you, I've got a Twitter full of hatred over my being okay with the Texas-Oklahoma move, and I am okay with it. I really am. I think that this is a seminal moment. It's an inflection point, and I think the bigger picture for college football will be better as a result. Because, Steve, you know as well as I do, when the Supreme Court rules 9-0 in favor of NIL, and everybody's coming off last year's COVID losses, all of these schools at every conference has got to be concerned about what? More revenue. We got to have more revenue. That's why we have immediately gone to 12 more teams. The intercollegiate athletics and college football hemorrhaged money last year. So, and now we've got NIL to deal with, and you know in any new TV deal with respect to the college football playoff, the players are going to get a piece of this pie. So what? The only thing that's been done here by the SEC is they have secured greater revenue for themselves to share a piece of that pie with players.
Yep.
So that's just good leadership in my view. I mean, it really is. I suspect that you'll see some other intelligent leaders of conferences do the same thing.
All 65 schools in Power 5 have one thing in common in 2020. They all had eight-figure losses.
Yeah. Right?
So let's just start with that.
It didn't matter how big of a program you were, if you were a blue blood, and none of that mattered. You lost money.
Yep, you lost money. Something that I know from a recruiting standpoint, this is going to be important for Texas. I know something that Joe Castiglione, whom you've known forever, Tim, mm-hmm. has complained about. He's been sick and tired of the 11 o'clock starts because, obviously, noon. Number one, the SEC, you're not going to get rid of noon starts. But what kind of role do you think is that playing in the thought process of athletic directors about being on TV? And the Pac-12 had a game start last year at 9.
Yeah. Listen, since the beginning of time, for blue blood or elite programs, start times have always been controversial when it comes to television and those locales. Listen, I was at one time in the 90s between my ESPN and CBS stints. I had a three-year period, as you know, in at Turner. And during that time, while I was at Turner, I did the syndicated SEC games that aired at 11:30 Central Time.
Right.
On Jefferson Pilot back in the day. We, you know, Sail with the Pilot. And Dave Rowe, Penn Stater, by the way, was my partner on those games. I might have been the only broadcaster from his home state that got booed every time he went into Tiger Stadium because the game wasn't being played at night.
Right.
I mean, they had to kind of be okay with 3:30 because it was on CBS, but 11:30 on a syndicator like Jefferson Pilot, are you kidding me? Oh man, I mean, there was no red carpet treatment from the kid who got his start in Baton Rouge. All right, I just got an earful of you know what between my ears every time I went in there to do it. It was never, can I please just get to a bar somewhere with my wife where I can get away from people? But that's been true everywhere. Joe, I think, was especially upset because this was the Nebraska game, you know, the 50-year, you know, anniversary of, you know, a game of the century that we all saw when we were kids. And Joe's my age. I get it. I understand.
Same here.
But at the same time, speaking for the company I work for, Big Noon Kickoff became a really big deal for us at Fox. Now, primarily because of the acquisition of the Big Ten, because as you know, your fans there in Happy Valley and in Columbus, Ohio, they may not be as stoked about noon as they would be a whiteout game in prime time.
Right.
But their understanding of the circumstances, and they know that Fox is a good partner, and that we're doing everything in our power to get the most eyeballs to our games. And, you know, ESPN's got a lot more revenue and inventory coming into there from college football than we do. We are a strong competitor, I think, and we're growing our portfolio without question. But for us to get the most eyeballs on Big Ten games, the Big Noon concept has been outstanding for us. And utilizing that factor from a programming standpoint, that the biggest game on Fox every Saturday is going to be on at noon, because the other networks that are carrying games don't have games on, and that we get a huge audience, and it's been we've improved our ratings tenfold by doing that. But it was, I think, really designed more because of the Big Ten sequence as opposed to, you know, the Big 12. The irony to this is the one game that Oklahoma did play and does play every year at noon is the game with Texas. And why do they play that game, the Red River rivalry, at noon? Because Dallas won't let them play. The city of Dallas doesn't want those people on the streets at night for a primetime game.
Right.
So, you know, there's refreshing double standards that can be used by a lot of people in intercollegiate athletics when they can all. If you can blame TV, blame TV. So, I don't hold Joe Castiglione in peril because of his statements made about it. I sort of understood it, but at the same time, Fox is paying a pretty penny, and you know what? You're taking that money and you're doing something with it. We got to do what's in our best interest as well.
Exactly right. And by the way, Jack Ham and I will be on the air at 9:30 Central Time because Penn State opens at Wisconsin at 11 a.m. at Camp Randall, and it's
well,
the big noon kickoff game. So thank you very much.
That'll be a game that everybody will be talking about all day that day. Do you really want to be on opposite Georgia, Clemson, LSU, UCLA? No, you don't.
No.
I mean, why would you want that? So people and fans and sometimes even administrators have to understand that college football is a business. If you want to build those facilities and have this arms race, where's that money coming from? It's coming from television, all right? Not just the turnstiles. The turnstiles do matter. And a lot of times athletic directors have to do that because their constituency, the fan bases, and you know this because you got a lot of small towns in Pennsylvania, people plan their lives around the start time of the game. And if you're coming, say, from somewhere near Pittsburgh and you're driving into Happy Valley, I can get the fact that maybe you don't like an occasional noon game. I can understand that. So the AD can easily say, well, blame TV, and that's okay. That's part of it. We all have to understand that.
Tim and I always have a great time talking because we live in that parallel universe.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
By the way, what did you shoot in the golf course today?
You know, a hard-fought 82. I almost made a hole-in-one. I flashed out of it.
Ooh.
Yeah, I hit the stick in the cup. Literally hit the stick in the low. It was going right to the lower part of the cup. I thought it was going to slam dunk. It hits and it bounces off and goes about a foot and a half away. But I shot 82. But
well
it was that's what I normally would shoot. I'm about an eight or I'm about a nine, eight, nine handicap, something like that. So so 10 over is okay for me.
Yeah, because Jack and I are going out next week. We're going to play. So
Well, please give him my best, will you?
I will.
I look forward to seeing you guys. I wish I could have seen you in Madison, but hey, you got Gus, you got the Gus bus, and
I know,
Joel
that's
coming
fine.
Down.
That's fine, but anytime I get to see you, that's gold to me. So thank you, my friend. It's so great to hear you. Thanks so much for everything.
Well, you call me anytime, Steve. You know that, and give my best to everything.
I will.
To everybody there in Happy Valley. I look forward to getting there.
You bet, Tim. Thank you so much, my friend.
Bye-bye.